this process, somehow this process of we call being alive, keeps renewing itself. One moment we're alive, and then somehow on the next moment we're alive again. We have some idea of our history and our personality and all this. And yet, does that really explain it? Is that the whole story of these moments of life, of aliveness, that just keep emerging from somewhere? And so that's part of what we're curious about in Zen practice. Just sort of the miracle that we're alive and that we don't hardly notice. And that's kind of the topic for the talk. So I was filling time while the battery was found, but it was, I hope, more or less on topic. Because our topic today is about birth. And like all world religions, Buddhism has a founder. Most world, maybe not all world, but most world religions, I guess, have a founder. So we have a founder. Shakyamuni Buddha, Gautama, Siddhartha, there's lots of names. And so we, you know, like Christianity and so on, we have an annual calendar of events around the story of the Buddha. Story of his birth, story of his religious practice, his awakening, story of his death. And so this weekend, today, we're going to celebrate the story of Buddha's birth. And so we have a little statue on the little table there holding a little baby. So that's our baby Buddha for today. And you'll get to interact with it more closely later, and you'll notice it's kind of a strange-looking Buddha, or strange-looking baby, sorry. Looks a little bit like a baby and a little bit like an old person. So you'll notice that, so it's curious. But actually, it kind of fits. Because it might be that our idea of we're born like a little innocent person and all this stuff happens to us and then we die, maybe there's more to the story than that. So somehow that's symbolized by this little old-looking baby. And that theme shows up in the tale of baby Buddha. So let me tell you a little bit about the tale. But before that, I just, like we just experienced together, I've really been thinking about this topic of birth. That we think of birth as like there was no being and then there was a being, right? We know many causes and conditions lead up to that moment of a baby emerging or a baby being conceived. And yet there's something about that moment, you know, that's just so fresh and so alive. And if you've ever attended a human birth or given birth, you know about that. And, you know, it's amazing. You can't be like sort of snoozing and spacing out when a baby's being born, right? It's impossible. You can't be like worrying about your taxes or, you know, bemoaning your how you're not smart enough or anything like that, right? When the baby's being born, it's like you have to be right there. So then I'm thinking, well, is that like some special case moment? Like a baby being born is a special moment and the other moments are sort of throwaway moments in which we should be worrying about our taxes and our sense of inadequacy or planning or something, wishing that our parents were a little something or other, or that we were. So that got me curious. You know, I wonder if it could be that every moment has that quality of birth, that quality of just being fully alive. And, you know, maybe we don't always notice, but maybe that quality is there. Maybe it's sort of just slightly out of reach or at times or slightly out of phase, like our glasses are sort of polarized the wrong way or something. You can kind of sense that that's there. And yet we know life sort of happens to us in a way, and yet we are involved, right? So we're a factor here in this, these moments that are being born. So then I thought, well, maybe to carry this analogy on, maybe how it goes for us is we're like midwives of our own life, midwives of each moment, or doulas of each moment. I know several women who are doulas, like what a great job, you know. You go support the woman giving birth. So maybe that's how it is for us, that we didn't create this moment. We don't have that capacity. Somehow the whole universe came together to create each moment. And yet we're there. We're in the room. You know, we're in the moment of our life. And our hands are holding, you know, the head of the baby as it comes out each moment. So how we hold that baby matters. We have a role to play in shaping these birthing moments of our life. And when I was thinking about this, maybe like Tuesday or so this week, I've been thinking about this all week, I thought about that and suddenly I just felt very happy. I really felt like, wow, I really can. I can really just sort of enjoy this moment, sort of give birth to a happy, peaceful moment. You know, just sort of turning my attention to that idea. So the mind is kind of amazing, you know. This great sense of happiness and relief. And then I noticed a little later in the week, conditions were such that I didn't feel so happy. Has that ever happened to you? I felt really tired and grouchy and annoyed with myself and others around me. And then there was a sense of like not wanting to let those moments be born when I returned to this kind of idea of like these moments are being born. I'm like, ah, not these moments, no! And you know, it's not too happy, you know, like it's like a breech birth, you know? It's like. Just makes it worse, is what I noticed. And then I was realizing that, you know, our midwife work with our life includes moments we like and moments we really don't like. And when I could let myself give birth to those moments of feeling grumpy and tired and so on, you know, it passed. Something worked its way through. And then I felt a great sense of relief again. And the sort of lightness of being returned. So I think turning towards our life as moments that are being born and really attending to all moments with sort of some equanimity, some kindness, some spaciousness, some willingness to just be with whatever the moments are, the really ugly babies and the beautiful babies, all the babies. Somehow that allows life to function fully, more fully. We can enjoy being alive, even with all the hardships of being alive, because we're just being born. We're just being born again and again and again. And then we start to realize, well, everyone else is just being born. And so there can be more freedom in our relationships as well. The person that we were grumpy with yesterday is not the same person. A new person has been born. Her body looks similar, maybe, but a new birth has taken place. Maybe 1,000 births have taken place. So I was really appreciating this occasion of the birth of the baby Buddha, celebrating the birth of baby Buddha, because the word Buddha actually means awakening. That's what it means. It's not like a name of a person. You know, and there are many ways that the story is told and understood in Buddhism, but one of many ways is like an ordinary person somehow sort of got in touch with his or her awakening and sort of became awakening itself. So the Buddha is awakening, not just a person. But we all have that, or we all are that. So anyway, it's just a way to think about it, a way to play with your life. We have a habitual way of thinking about our life, right? We think we know who we are and what's happening each moment. But sometimes it's so liberating to take up a sort of another stance or another like lens in looking at the moments of our life. What if this is not me slogging through my day, but this is an endless series of births? Every moment, just here it is again. Wow. And you know, you'll remember where you're driving to and what you're supposed to do, probably. But even if you don't, maybe it's not so important, you know, because you're just being born. So anyway, just encourage us to play with that if you like the rest of this day. Some of us are staying to sit for the afternoon. And that's part of the sort of utility of meditation practice. If we reduce our activity a little bit, there's a little more possibility to look at our life in a fresh way. When we're very busy, all our habit energy is activated usually. So that's one of the things that's nice about sitting, just to stop moving, just to stop moving and see how it is for us on this moment and then on this moment. What are you giving birth to right now? So, now a story. I have to fulfill my obligation here and tell the story about Baby Buddha, the legend of Baby Buddha. And like all traditional stories, it's a mixed bag. There are things that are really wonderful and things that we maybe don't like as much, and the mind wants to kind of winnow out what seems like inappropriate cultural content from a previous, you know, perhaps, you know, not as enlightened age, and the mind wants to hold on to the beautiful things that we appreciate, but we get the whole package, right? That's how it is with tradition, and that's how it is also with our moments. We get the whole me, you know? Yes, a beautiful moment is being born, but guess who's there? You're there, right? So the whole thing is here. So here's the story. 25 centuries ago, King Suddhodana ruled a land, really small land, it turns out, near the Himalaya Mountains. One day during a midsummer festival, his wife, Queen Maya, retired to her quarters to rest. And when she fell asleep, she dreamed a vivid dream. Four beings, or it's translated angels here, carried her high into the mountain in this dream and clothed her in flowers. So we have flowers. And a magnificent white bull elephant bearing a white lotus in its trunk approached Queen Maya and walked around her three times. So this big elephant with a flower walked around her three times. Then the elephant struck her on the right side with its trunk and vanished into her. When Maya awoke, she realized she was pregnant and told her husband about the dream. And the king summoned 64 Brahmins, so like priests, to come and interpret it. Must have been like a big room or something. 64 Brahmins showed up. Queen Maya would give birth to a son, the Brahmins said, and if the son did not leave the household, he would become a world conqueror, like a really important figure, political figure. However, if he were to leave the household, he would become a Buddha, become an awakened one, a religious leader. So they had a prophecy. When the time for the birth grew near, Queen Maya wished to travel from Kapilavastu, the capital where she lived, to her childhood home, Devadaha, which was the custom. So the woman would go to the husband's clan to live, and then they return home to give birth. And with the king's blessings, she left. And some stories say she walked. This story says she was carried in a palanquin. On the way to Devadaha, the procession passed the Lumbini Grove, beautiful grove, which was full of blooming trees and flowers. Entranced, the queen asked the entourage to stop, got out of the palanquin and entered the grove. And as she reached up to touch the blossoms, her son was born. So it was a really quick birth. And then the queen and her son were showered with perfumed blossoms, and streams of sparkling water poured from the sky to bathe them. And the infant stood up, took 7 steps, and proclaimed, "I alone am the world-honored one." So the baby Buddha could talk and walk right away. And we don't have actually the traditional statue of this, because, you know, we're picking and choosing a little bit. But in the traditional statue, after he takes those 3 steps, he does this, like, world-conquering mudra, where one hand is pointing up to the sky, and one hand is pointing down. It's kind of like a John Travolta kind of thing, too. This. And pointing down to the earth, so the symbolism being that this being is in touch, you know, like, joins heaven and earth. It's like conquers heaven and earth in some way. So oftentimes in the ceremony, they have a little statue of a baby standing like that. It looks like about a 3-year-old usually. But anyway, miraculously, this baby was born. And then Queen Maya and her son returned to Kapilavatthu, and 7 days later, the queen died. And the infant prince was nursed and raised by the queen's sister, Pajapati, who was also married to King Suddhodana. That confused me for many years. Sometimes they say he was raised by his aunt, sometimes they say he was raised by his stepmother, but it was both, because 2 sisters were married to the same man. And so the other sister, also the other wife, raised baby Buddha. And commentaries in the story point out that there are a lot of elements to this that were borrowed from Hindu texts, especially the birth of Indra from the Rig Veda. And there may have been other influences from Hellenic literature, because the Greeks invaded that area under Alexander the Great some years later. Well, 800 years later, but who knows how it goes. And there are all kinds of wild symbols there, right? The white elephant was sacred, representing fertility and wisdom. The lotus flower he was carrying is a symbol of awakening, and so on. And so after our talk, and we'll have a little bit of time to discuss these topics, we'll do a little ceremony where we'll sort of bring ourselves internally to that grove of flowering trees here, with our grove of flowering trees here, and give the baby Buddha a little bath to welcome this incredible event. And what I think is, it's easy to be a little reactive to this wild, you know, stuff. And yet, it's also a sort of pointing out of the true nature of birth and the true nature of life also. We're all that, right? We all have this incredible spiritual power. We all are in touch with heaven and earth. We all are being born in every moment. And we're all dying in every moment. Sometimes in Zen, we talk about the great matter. They talk about the great matter, the most important thing in our practice. And what the great matter is birth and death. Birth and death. And it's like a compound phrase with 2 characters together. That probably the best translation into English is birth hyphen and hyphen death. So birth and death. Birth and death, one thing. That we tend to think birth is wonderful and death we don't like. Death is to be avoided. But maybe birth and death are somehow right there together in a way that we don't always realize. So it's maybe a little harder to understand how we can be there with the death of each moment, with the death of the body, the death of the mind, as well as being there with the birth of each moment. But how can we have birth without death, right? It's impossible. So maybe we can also learn how to celebrate and appreciate death, life and death. And so one expression of this from the Zen tradition, which is really quite wonderful, and it sounds a little funny at first, but if you think about it and you study this, you realize this is wonderful. Which is that there's a tradition in Japan, I think all literary Japan, but especially the Zen monks of Japan, maybe not so much today, but there's a tradition of writing a poem right before you die, a death poem. The practice is called Jisei, which means farewell to life, farewell to life. So it's a practice of kind of giving birth to your death in a certain way, giving your death a certain luminosity, a certain joy, which is not how we usually think about death. So I thought as part of our Buddha's birthday celebration, we might appreciate a few of these Jisei poems as well. So we have a story of birth, and we have some poems of death. And we have this moment coming and going. So some of these poems just appreciate the beauty of the world and the sort of sad beauty of leaving the world. Here's one. This is the last day I shall see the mallards crying over Lake Iwari. Then shall I disappear into the clouds. This is the last day I shall see the mallards crying over Lake Iwari. Then shall I disappear into the clouds. It feels like a great sort of exhalation, doesn't it? It's disappearing. Or, overtaken by darkness, I will lodge under the boughs of this tree. Flowers alone host me tonight. Overtaken by darkness, I will lodge under the boughs of this tree. Flowers alone will host me tonight. So sort of that appreciation of being alone. So we're sort of alone in our birth and our dying, and we're sort of not. And some of these Jisei poems just appreciate the transient sort of nature of all of this, right? None of it staying the same, always changing, always coming and going. Like this one. This world, to what may I liken it? To autumn fields lit dimly in the dusk by lightning flashes. This world, to what may I liken it? To autumn fields lit dimly in the dusk by lightning flashes. And some of these poems acknowledge the pain of all of this, right? There's pain here, too. I'm not trying to sort of paper over the discomfort and the difficulty and the pain of being a person, living and dying. So these are honest expressions, like this one. Like a rotten log, half buried in the ground, my life, which has not flowered, comes to this sad end. Like a rotten log, half buried in the ground, my life, which has not flowered, comes to this sad end. Yeah, we know from ecology, right? A rotten log gives life, too. A few more, then we'll close. The poems also include an element of, like, acknowledging in advance the reality of this. Like, we have a fairly death-denying culture, so this is a little bit the opposite. Maybe a death-embracing culture in a certain way. It's like this one. I wish to die in spring, beneath the cherry blossoms, while the springtime moon is full. I wish to die in spring, beneath the cherry blossoms, while the springtime moon is full, which is right now, actually, isn't it? Yeah, right now. It's almost full. Blossoms are falling. Or we can turn that around, too. What if we replace the word death with, or die with the word born? That might be interesting. Maybe we can use these two ideas interchangeably, because this idea of birth and death. What if we turn that one around? I wish to be born in spring, beneath the cherry blossoms, while the springtime moon is full. Feel into that. I wish to be born in spring, beneath the cherry blossoms, when the springtime moon is full. So may we all turn towards all these moments. I mean, they're here anyway. These moments of birth, these moments of death, with something of this grace, this kindness, this embracing and allowing. So here's an American expression of all this. The American poet Mary Oliver, much loved in Dharma centers. I wonder if she knows that, like, they read her stuff in Zen centers all over the world. Somebody should tell her, you know. She probably hasn't, you know, really? So this is the end of a poem by Mary Oliver about death. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I've made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I've made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. So not just to be a visitor, right? To really be an inhabitant of our life, of our world. So anyway, just one way we could think about the birth of Buddha, the birth of awakening. In one hand, a story of maybe some semi-mythical figure long ago that we really appreciate for that, you know, starting some chain of events into motion that resulted in this, you know, somehow. On one hand, we appreciate that. On the other hand, something that's happening right now, right? Right now in all of our lives. Today, tonight, yesterday, tomorrow, right now. Birth and death. So thanks for coming. It's wonderful to have such an august audience of familiar and new faces. We appreciate your coming today. Do you have any thoughts or comments? Or I don't know if there's any answers, but if you have questions, that's good. It's good to have questions. We have a couple of minutes, and then we'll enjoy our ceremony of bathing the baby Buddha. Yeah, and the whole poem's great too. I wish I had the whole thing, but when it's over, I don't want to wonder if I've made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. So to me, that visited, I think, is the turning word there, right? And we can ask ourselves that, right? You know, anytime. Am I just visiting my day? Or am I really here, you know?
Yeah.
On my way to somewhere else because I'm just here visiting, you know.
That's sort of what I liked about that. Did I just visit, meaning I wasn't mindful
right.
really of every what you were talking about, every incredible moment that you could be aware of if you allowed yourself, or you can just sort of drift
right.
and be a mindless visitor. And
not to say that visiting is like a failure, right? Yeah, right. Yeah. Go, okay. That's what's happening right now, right?
That felt lighter to me
than
being down on myself.
Right. Thank you for that. Yeah. Right.
Dogen's continuous practice, right?
Uh-huh.
Every, you can't get away from it. It's here always, if you're visiting or not.
Right. innocence again, yeah. Yeah. Which I suppose the relief in that, I mean, that's easy. We are good at guilt, the guilt thing too, but the relief in that is there it is again, right? It's available. There it is again. Yeah. Yeah. And thank you also to people who brought flowers. We're going to really enjoy the baby Buddha's flowered pagoda in our ceremony. It's beautiful. And flowers are, you know, also a metaphor for birth and death, right? And sometimes, you know, we tend to tidy them away eventually, but part of the tradition on a Buddhist altar is you leave the flowers even as they die and fall apart, that's included. And that's also beautiful. I always appreciated that idea. It's not just about this, although this is wonderful.
So is there something about the practice itself that reenacts that whole metaphor?
Tell me more about what you mean.
I'm just wondering about the willingness to sit.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm acclimated to a metaphor or a myth that helps me do something.
Yeah.
Like build a home practice.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much to do there.
Right.
That's why I come here.
Uh-huh.
So I was just curious if you had something to say about the practice in the light of the birth to death. I mean, that's a big topic.
Uh-huh. Well, it's possible for us to, perhaps it's possible for us to be increasingly aware, as you are expressing, the way we give birth to these metaphors, or give birth to this idea. And the central idea that we're giving birth to all the time is, like, me, right? You know, my identity. So, yeah. And like Marty's pointing out, there's nothing wrong with that. But there can be a great suffering to that if we don't know that that's what we're doing, right? Then we have to protect ourselves, and we're over here, not awake, alight, not awakened, or not mindful, or something like that. We have to go over there and try to get something. So, yeah, something about that there's a kind of dance that's going on all the time with sort of being and doing, right? Or creating a metaphor and experiencing something direct about our experience, and creating an idea and experiencing something direct. And so, yeah, maybe dancing.
It's like a dialectic.
Yeah, like a dialectic or a dance or. Something like that, yeah. But, I mean, there's many ways to understand this, right? No one way is quite it. So I feel like with these talks and teachings, we just, you know, it's like a little teeny flashlight torch in the dark, you know, shining on a little teeny piece of something very big, you know. We don't quite know that we suspect there's something more to this life, but we can only see this part right now. Okay, well, I mean, that's enough, yeah. It's like, who needs more words for all this anyway, right? We love our words, but then we get so tangled. So there's a little chant to end, which is in the same page, I think. And then we'll do three more of those deep bows. And then Marty will explain to us our little ceremony of bathing the baby Buddha. So thanks again. I appreciate it.
May our intentions